Rampant CastPod. I'm your Paul, host Essen, and I'm joined by my regular discoursers, Andrew Hudson and Travis Riley. How are you fine gentle evenings doing this, men?
Very confused now. Like, more so than usual after your introductions.
This is not starting out well.
So, normally we record these a little bit in advance and try to avoid any timely discussions to preserve the timeliness of it. But I feel like I need to get something out of the way right now. I'm 24 hours removed from my second COVID vaccine shot, and everything they say about how it hits you is totally true. And I am really dragging in the energy department, which is a shame because we are continuing our video game podcast series, and this is a very strong generation of games. And so I just want to get ahead of it right now. If I sound low energy, it's not the game's fault. It's all my fault. But gentlemen, what are we drinking this evening?
I am drinking a Lagunitas IPA, which I just cracked open, so I might have to mute that section there a minute, but I'm ready to get drinking.
I am impressed how well you pronounce the name. I am somewhat on theme tonight. I have, from Hysteria Brewing Company, keeping it local, Gotta Haze 'Em All, with a non-copyrighted Pokemon drawing on the front.
And I actually had something prepared to drink tonight, but I decided I'll be drinking in my vaccine tonight instead of taking a chance mixing alcohol and possibly getting mutant powers. But Andrew, why don't you let us talk to us about what generation of games we're talking about today?
We are going to be talking about the seventh generation of video games, which is broadly defined as any game that was released on one of these consoles, the Wii, the Wii U, the Xbox 360, the PlayStation 3, or the Nintendo 3DS. Or we're also going to include, since this covers a time period, because PC games don't always fit into that, but we still want to talk about PC games frequently, PC games that were released between the years of 2006 and 2013, which roughly coincides with those years of production for those consoles. An interesting thing that we also have to consider as we approach this generation of video games, though, is that so many of these consoles and PC started to really get into the digital distribution models of video games, much more so than earlier generations. DLC becomes a thing. But more importantly, games were never finished. We saw this really start last generation. I mentioned Warcraft was a game that was hugely popular, and MMOs being completely online continued to progress. So a person could reasonably say that their favorite period of World of Warcraft was the Burning Crusade, which was released in this generation, whereas the actual game World of Warcraft was last generation. So a game could come into a situation where it's going to confuse our definitions of generation, or even our definition of what makes a game. When is a game finished? So we're going to have to set some ground rules about how we're going to establish some of those games. We have some clear contenders in this generation. I mentioned DLC, the Telltale episodic games. Are these one game? Are they two? Are they a series of games? And something even as innocuous as Blizzard doing StarCraft in three installments could really impact things, because both Paul and I have chosen a StarCraft game in the past. It could happen again. So the goal is a game is released at the release date, and even if it changes significantly afterwards, it should be the game as it's released. Episodic games are a game, but different series of that episodic game would be different games. So Walking Dead Season 1 is a game, and Walking Dead Season 2 is a different game. And I hope that clarifies it. It's never going to be perfect, but this is the best we can do.
Travis. I'll just toss in there. Then there's other oddities, which we'll get to them if they actually arise, of something like the Orange Box that packaged together a bunch of older games along with a newer game, which really muddies the waters at that point.
Yeah, the games become much harder to identify as distinct items. The purchasing of them is not necessarily unique and consistent, and what they're packaged as is definitely changing in this generation especially. We're going to also continue with our guessing game. To remind everyone, the guessing game is our effort to see who knows the other members of the panel the best. We will each pick a game that we believe is on the list of games that the other person has provided. So each of us gets two guesses, one for each of the other panelists, and a correct guess wins us a prize buck. And the current scores, according to my notes, are Travis in the lead with 6 prize bucks, and Paul and I in second place with 3 prize bucks each. And Travis has almost locked this up. If he continues to score at the same pace, we have no chance of catching him. So, Paul, you and I have our work cut out to it for us on the guessing.
Let's do this.
Well, I will let the audience know it's going to get harder for me to guess for my fellow discoursers because I was not as involved in the next generation, I think. And this one was really tough to pick for you guys. So I'm interested to see what everyone picked.
All right. So Travis, why don't you tell us what the categories that we are discussing?
Well, or should you tell us your picks first?
Sure, I can do that. So for Travis, I know that you are a huge fan of Batman. And there is no game that I've played that has made me feel more like I was Batman in the I'm Batman kind of way than Batman Arkham Asylum. And so I'm going to pick that game for you.
And you really like picking games in series and having to throw a dart at which one in the series, don't you?
Well, it's the first one. It's
right.
We'll see. Apparently I'm wrong. That's what I'm hearing.
No, I didn't say that.
Speaking of series, for Andrew, I had a tough time because I really wanted to go with Diablo 3, but I got burned on Diablo 1. I got lucky on Diablo 2. Do I want to roll the dice on Diablo 3? The other choice was StarCraft 2 Wings of Liberty, but there we run into the problem. Is it Wings of Liberty? Is it Heart of the Swarm? Is it Legacy of the Void? And so I'm going to switch my pick right now, and I'm going to go with Diablo 3 instead of StarCraft 2 Wings of Liberty. I'm calling a mulligan, an audible, whatever it's called, right now. Going with Diablo 3.
You're calling a vaccine.
I'm calling a vaccine, yes. Vaccinating your pick.
All right, so the whole thing about series is actually a really good lead-in for me on Paul, my pick for Paul, because the number of choices I have for Paul in this generation that are series picks within the generation is absolutely mind-melting, and it is upsetting, because I cannot wait to hear exactly how I was wrong that this game that is this number in the series has a better story than this other game that was in this series, and that's why it's the best story one, and this one that is a better multiplayer experience than the one that is in this series. No, I have to make a pick, and I'm going with it, but I'm absolutely miserable in this choice because I have to use as some sort of tiebreaker what I think indicates the one that you have played the most, but I can't be 100% sure. So for Paul, I am picking Mass Effect 2.
Oh, going with 2, huh?
Going with 2.
I'm interested in explaining why you're wrong.
I look forward to hearing that in a few minutes. And for Travis, Batman also came onto my radar as a pretty good choice.
On your Bat-dar.
On my Bat-dar, yeah. But I ended up going with a different route, and I picked a game that I think might be something that Paul likes better than you do, but I think is going to somehow end up on your list anyway, because it is a game that everyone who has played it seems to have really good memories and thoughts about, even if it's not their cup of tea. And it's also one that I do know you spent a fair amount of time playing, so I'm going to just go with it and say BioShock is on your list.
Ooh. All right. So, I have a very similar line of thinking for Paul's guess as Andrew did. And I came to the same conclusion, so I'm picking Mass Effect 2. And he's going to pick Mass Effect 3 just to spite both of us now.
Well, he can't pick Mass Effect 3 because Mass Effect 3 is not in this generation.
I can pick Mass Effect 1, though.
He absolutely can and will pick Mass Effect 1 as having the better story than Mass Effect 2, even if Mass Effect 2 was
Mass Effect 3 was on the Xbox One?
I think Mass Effect 3 is just generation.
Yeah, I thought it was still on the 360. Yeah, the whole trilogy.
All right, so I didn't pay enough attention at that point, honestly. I probably stopped at a certain point.
That would be a really slick way for them to make you buy the next Xbox, though. It'd be like, you want to finish the trilogy? You gotta buy the next console. But, all right. They're not that mean. And for Andrew, I had two of them. I felt one of them, I think one of us is going to say it, so I should guess it for Andrew. But I want to go a different route because I actually checked our emails from many years ago, and just to confirm you did play the game, which is probably a bad indication, I had to check that you played it. I'm going same genre as Paul with Diablo 3, but I'm seeing if you mix it up and go with Titan Quest. Partially because it's the only PC game I think I played this generation. So, although I know you played the heck out of 360 games, if your true achievements is anything to judge by.
Yeah.
All right, so now I'm going to hit up the categories. Maybe we went out of order. Sorry.
Okay.
we're all discombobulated by your intro. All right, so our categories. We have most fun with friends, which usually is multiplayer, but Paul picked a non-multiplayer his first time out. Did I? We have best... Well, you picked Mario Brothers 3, the first generation.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
We have best story, which Final Fantasy has kind of been ruling that category, I think. We have best music, which has gone all over the place. We have most memorable, which anybody can interpret however they want that to mean, although they have to pick a game. And then we have personal best, and finally we have some worthy of discourse at the end if something wasn't worthy of the other categories. So, Paul, you can lead us off with your most fun with friends game.
So this is probably the one that I struggled with the most, because I feel like what I eventually settled, there was multiple strong contenders here, and I feel like the one I settled on is a little bit of a cheat. But looking at this, there is, I think without a doubt, one game that I have played with friends more than any others that's in this generation. And in fact, I just played it with friends a couple days ago, still from this generation. And that is StarCraft II. And while the version that I played is StarCraft II Legacy of the Void, that's not in this generation. And it's hard for me to separate Wings of Liberty from Heart of the Swarm from Legacy of the Void. And so ultimately I went with Wings of Liberty because I feel like it was such a great improvement over the original StarCraft formula. It refined so many things. It added to the interface different things that you can do. It is supremely balanced, as Blizzard always does, between Protoss, Zerg, and Terran, which is incredible because they're such different races. To this day, people are still playing it professionally. Again, it's Legacy of the Void, not Wings of Liberty, but it's effectively the same game. A couple of units are different. It is simply an incredible game. It's a blast to play with friends. There's so many different strategies, from 12 pools to cannon rushes to mass void rays, and it never gets old, and it's constantly surprising.
And just to let the audience know, we actually have to schedule our podcast recording around Paul's playing of StarCraft 2. So
absolutely true. Yes, play it. I try and play it every week. Andrew looks disappointed. So,
well, I honestly, I came into this with like, okay, tell me the number that you're picking on this particular one, because this was one of the ones that I had you pegged for a series. I just didn't think that StarCraft was be the one, but I can't say that you made a wrong choice. You're right that you play it a lot. It is a great multiplayer game, and it's a great game all around. So fine, you are entitled to these opinions, and they're not wrong for once.
No, thank you.
If we did not have to split it up into the separate games, I probably would have guessed StarCraft 2 because I knew you're going to pick it as your multiplayer.
Yeah.
But once we had to split it up, I was like, I don't know. I guess if they're different generations, I could have looked up which one was in this generation.
Well, two of them are in this generation, but again, I could be wrong about this one because I was wrong about Mass Effect 3 not being in this generation, but I'm pretty sure that Wings of Liberty released in like 2011 and Heart of the Swarm released in 2013 or 2012. So they were both in this generation, whereas Legacy of the Void released in like 2014 or 2015, so it would be next generation.
But I can see, I like Paul's reasoning, is that this was the first one.
Yeah.
So this was the biggest leap from StarCraft 2 to this. The other ones are just refinements of what was already then there, right?
Absolutely. As a game, StarCraft 2 belongs in this generation, no doubt about it.
Yeah, StarCraft 2 is a quantum leap over StarCraft 1. Excuse me. They really feel like expansion packs to me. I know they're released as separate games, and they are separate games because they have fully fleshed out single player campaigns, but in terms of multiplayer, oftentimes it's adding one or two more units, maybe tweaking some of the balancing, which they often do outside of releasing new games anyway. So it's really hard for me to consider Legacy of the Void a considerably different multiplayer game than Wings of Liberty, rather than just a evolution.
Right. All right, Andrew.
So for my most fun with friends game, for quite a while, I had the game 1 versus 100 as my pick here. And I don't anymore. And the reason why is because as much as that was a game that I did enjoy playing with friends, and the multiplayer experience of it was just remarkable and amazing, a free-to-play game on the Xbox 360 where you could actually play a contestant in a real-life trivia puzzle game for prizes live against millions of other people, theoretically. And I'd played it with you guys and our friends, and it was a fantastic experience. But it was very short-lived. And I played much more of it as a single-player experience. So in the end, I decided that wasn't the one that was the best fit for most fun with friends, even though it was a great choice. But I had to mention it as this incredible runner-up to it, because I'm going to go very far outside my comfort zone and say a game that is going to be very surprising to you guys, I think, and that is Borderlands 2.
Wow, yeah, first-person shooter.
Wow, yeah, that's... Well, I can see it's first-person shooter plus Diablo.
It's first-person shooter plus Diablo, but honestly, it's more than that. And that's why I played Borderlands, the original. I was convinced to give it a shot, because it's like, well, it's first-person shooter plus Diablo. I can put my training wheels on and see how I can get better at first-person shooters. And I didn't enjoy it. It didn't give me the training wheels for the first-person shooters that I needed. But to a certain extent, Borderlands 2 did. And what hooked me wasn't the fact that it was Diablo. It was the fact that the story and how it was presented, and the fact that I could play it for fun with friends. I played it with Paul and another friend of ours, and I've played it independently with another group of friends, and that I've played much more of it with other groups of friends after that. Borderlands has become a series for me that I'm actually excited to play. And that is not something that I expected, especially after I tried out Borderlands the original and did not enjoy it, and still don't, honestly. It's unrefined. Borderlands 2 took all the promise of Borderlands and refined it, and really, by hanging it all on Jack, your antagonist in that game, and being such an awesome character and telling such an interesting story, made it work in a multiplayer setting. Stories and multiplayer don't usually go together. Borderlands 2 meshed them in ways that you don't see these things being meshed. It meshed all kinds of things that you don't normally see being meshed. And for that, and because of all the fun that I have had playing it for many, many hours over my time in the Borderlands on Pandora, it takes most fun with friends.
Yeah, that is a surprise. But don't think you snuck past that you worked in another worthy of discourse by talking so much about, oh, this is my backup. I was going to do the same thing with multiplayer, but I didn't because I'm the bigger man. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
Well, Paul's going to hate me. But although I will know one thing. So I had some games in this generation I had a hard time figuring out. Did I play 1, 2, 3? Like Gears. I can't for life me remember which Gears game I actually played in this generation.
For the record, that was the game that I was going to pick as a very close runner-up for Fun with Friends, is Gears of War, but I couldn't figure out which one to pick.
Well, do you remember what I played with you and Dave?
No.
You probably can't even tell me. Yeah, see.
I don't even remember which Borderlands I played with Andrew. I guess it was 2.
Well, and I'm pretty sure I only played Borderlands 1, because when I looked at the expansions for Borderlands, this ties into my multiplayer because Borderlands was one of my runners-up. But when I looked at the expansions, I don't remember any of the expansions for Borderlands 2. So I think I only played Borderlands 1, but I played the hell out of that game. But it was just a runner-up. I guess I could say for worthy for discourse, but I'm kind of a little sad that none of us actually said Madden NFL 09.
Yeah.
We played a lot of that. Not as much as Sega 2K5, though. So.
Right, which was part of my point why I didn't pick it, was because we only really played each other. Like, I only played Andrew twice and I only played Paul twice. Otherwise, it was 12 games against the computer, right? Plus the playoffs. So it was still largely a solo game. It was the meta game that we did more multiplayer.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I gave a lot of thought to it because in terms of, like, memorable multiplayer experiences, that game might take the cake, right? Like, yeah. I still remember, like, these amazing plays that we had in those games. And
I still remember, like, picking off Andrew 7 times, yeah.
Yeah, and like, just these incredible, like, comebacks that we had and everything. But, I don't know what it is about it. I think it was just because it was just us three, and it didn't play, you know. And outside of, like, the couple years that we played it, that was it. I mean, it's hard to compare that with something like StarCraft II, which I've been playing for... I guess over a decade now, which is pretty incredible.
But like I said, we're old.
Yeah.
But like I said, it was also a lot of, like, all the email write-ups we would make for it. It was a lot of the meta outside of the game, meta game talking and trash talking and stuff like that. So ultimately I didn't pick that. So there you go, Paul. I talked about two games that aren't my choice. The one I went with, was to me a quintessential Fun with Friends game. So I picked Guitar Hero in a previous generation. I have to pick Rock Band 3 in this generation. Because it's a game I don't want to play by myself. Like, I have to play this game with other people. Otherwise, I just feel like I'm kind of wasting my time wailing away on a plastic guitar or fake drums or anything. At least the drums, you kind of feel like you're actually learning how to play drums. Playing this game and actually having, you know, all the full ensemble, which admittedly we didn't have as many times as we probably would have liked, but Yeah, but the core Rock Band 3, and also the fact that we could get, well, the Beatles are jerks, so you couldn't export their songs. But we bought like Lego Rock Band and Green Day Rock Band, and we could download, and those could be imported into Rock Band 3, and then you could download all sorts of songs, and some of those could even be imported into Rock Band Blitz, I think. Like, it was just, it became like its own kind of ecosystem at that point.
It looks like we did a good job foreshadowing. Our picks so far have been StarCraft 2, Borderlands 2, and Rock Band 3. So, over right. under on how many of the remaining picks are going to be sequels or you know,
right.
have a number in them, basically.
Although, to be fair, the first Rock Band we bought was the Rock Band Beatles at a Black Friday sale, which made the GameStop very happy because we bought it at like $11.59 on Black Friday. So that tipped them over their scale, so they got some sort of bonus. So they were very happy that we got there to buy this like $300 game from them at the last minute. So wow, I was like,
$300 game.
Because it came, I think maybe that's an exaggeration, but I mean, it came with the game, the drum set, and the Beatles guitar.
I'm not saying you're wrong.
I can see it being 300. It, yeah,
that just goes to show why they, you know, Activision and the rest loved Rock Band and Guitar Hero, because they were printing money on
right.
plastic.
And then when we bought Rock Band 3, we bought the version that came with the keyboard. Maybe you had to buy it with the keyboard, and you could only use the keyboard in like a handful of. Because I don't think every song in the game supported it, because if the song doesn't have keyboards, you can't use the keyboard. But, I mean, the keyboard was still a very cool peripheral. And again, like, you're actually... It was interesting that Guitar Hero started it, but then Rock Band was, to me, like a leap forward, because you're actually playing drums, you're actually playing the keyboard, you're actually singing. At that point, the only thing that's fake is playing the guitar. And guess what? I bought the actual guitar that you can plug in with an adapter that had actual strings on it, and you could actually play like 20 songs or something. It wasn't supported by every song, but you could play the actual guitar with it as well. And in theory, it was a real guitar, but I never actually used it as a real guitar. Only for those couple of songs in Rock Band. That was a worthy investment. Yeah.
Investment may be the wrong
word.
You
pay for a real guitar.
Investment by PCs. Depreciating asset, I think, is the word I was looking for.
Sorry, Paul vs. Market has to break in here and say that might be the wrong term.
I, believe me, I understand. As a person who invests in German cardboard, I am well acquainted with this.
All right, so we all kept upping the ante and talked about more and more games and fun with friends. So Paul, bring us back to one game choice for best story.
Best story. Okay, I can do one game here. I'll be blunt. BioShock Infinite. Not the first one, but the third one. I don't know if you've played it before, wow. And I don't want to get into spoilers because. But it's a really...
Oh, would you kindly?
that's BioShock 1.
I understand.
But it's...
I'm glad you understand.
It's a really incredible story. And it starts off with, you know, your character kind of appearing in the middle of nowhere with amnesia, not sure why he's there. And you travel to this floating city in the air called Columbia. And
Columbia?
Yeah. And during the course of the game, you listen to these audio files and you kind of piece together the background of the story, and it's kind of hard to go any further without giving stuff away. Let's just say that there's kind of alternate universes and time travel and kind of a lot of twists, and especially if you play the expansions of the game. To Andrew's point, I would never ever say BioShock Infinite was an unfinished game, but it had some incredibly impactful DLC that came afterwards that really, really adds to not just BioShock Infinite, but actual previous BioShocks as well, and kind of ties the entire series together in a really impressive way. And it really makes you think, and it really sticks with you. And this was almost a pick for me for the most memorable as well, because there are moments in there which are incredibly emotional. And again, it's kind of hard to get into it without spoiling a lot of stuff, but it's a roller coaster of a story. There's constant twists and turns. You really don't know what's going to happen and where it's going to end up. And I challenge anybody to play it and not be kind of shocked by what happens at the end. So.
Oh. Not be BioShocked. You missed it.
Yeah, well, what can I say? I'm not on my game tonight. So BioShock Infinite is the pick for best story. Nothing else will do.
Until Andrew picks his pick. He's cracking his neck. He's getting ready.
I'm going to be, I'm in a different league, Paul. I'm in a completely different league.
The minor leagues?
I'm coming with the indies for you.
Oh, of course. Shocking.
My pick for best story for this generation goes to Dust and Elysian Tale.
Oh, I actually played that. It's not good.
Dust and Elysian Tale is a very interesting Metroidvania-style action RPG beat-em-up. And so you just think, well, what kind of game has like that? That doesn't have a story. That's not a story game. Except it also does have an incredible story. It is, at times, a little bit cliched, but it hangs so well all together and is memorable and complete in a way that so few games of this generation are with their stories. I didn't play BioShock, so I can't comment on how successful a story BioShock is, and it probably is a very good story from everything I've heard about it, and the people who have played it, they all love it, so I'm not saying you're wrong, but since I didn't experience it, I can't talk about that. For a lot of games I played in this generation, story wasn't very good, and that could be just how games went for me, because I'm going for games with gameplay rather than for story, when I usually went for story, but Dust brought the story and did it very well, and it still amazes me how successful this game is on all fronts, considering that essentially every single piece of it, from story to graphics to gameplay to coding, was all done by one guy. He hired a few pieces of work from outside, but it's all this one guy, his idea from beginning to end, and he made it work beautifully. Story is fantastic, and he deserves all the credit.
One of my regrets of, I still own it, and I still have my 360, but one of my regrets is I never actually finished this game. But yeah, it's a fantastic, beautiful game.
Yeah, it's a shame that you don't like your first-person shooters, because BioShock Infinite, I have to imagine, even on the easiest difficulty level, it does, the vast majority of the gameplay is first-person shooter. But I do think that you would really appreciate the story if you could somehow find a way to skip through all the gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, and at that point, I'm just, why wouldn't I watch a movie, right? If I'm going to play a game, I want gameplay, and so I've got the games that have the gameplay. That being said, we may end up seeing more shooters later on, simply because as I played more and more games, there are just so many shooters, especially in this generation, that I kind of have to play some of them occasionally. So why am I not playing BioShock? Mostly it's just I haven't had the time to get around to it yet. I'll probably play it eventually.
The achievements were probably too hard.
Yeah, that's also probably true. I am still not good at shooters, and I don't want to go down a path of playing a game that I can't complete.
BioShock Infinite,
because I'm not skilled enough.
BioShock Infinite is definitely high on my list, along with a couple other games from this generation of games that I really, really wish that they would turn into a movie, because I think it would work really well. Maybe better suited to like a miniseries or something, because there might be a little bit too much material, but I think a movie could work. And I think it could be the movie to like break the curse of the video game movies.
All right. Well, you guys keep talking about movies and miniseries and everything. So my best story basically is that it's The Walking Dead season one.
Yeah. Can't argue with that.
It was like, and to kind of counter Andrew's point about going for gameplay, you don't come into most Telltale games for the gameplay. You're coming in to experience the story, and maybe arguably they would be better because the actual choices you make and the impact they have, we discussed this back when we all played it, like, doesn't seem to be all that great.
It turns out not to matter, but the storytelling does such a great job of convincing you that it does matter in the moment. And you could see ways where it could have played out differently if you had acted differently. So the illusion of agency matters in helping to make it a game. Whereas in a movie, you would never have had that illusion of agency and you wouldn't have had the emotional investment.
Right. And you do still, and you have more emotional investment to, in those bits of gameplay, to, I need to run away from these zombies, or I need to shoot this person in the head, or, you know, like, or even just the actual, and Mass Effect has this too, and some other games like that, of like, you only have a few seconds to make your choice in what you're going to say before it auto selects something, if I recall right. So, or you just don't say anything, right? I think is sometimes what just happens. But also it had a great story moment, which I tried to find if there's a video clip online and I can't find it. But like, you come downstairs and everybody's eating, and one of your options to say is, "It's people."
Yeah.
And the person just like, "Yes, we're all people here." And I'm like, "That's not what I meant." But, and the game knew it. That's why it gave me that option. But just like moments like that. But there's some emotional heft to this game too, so, or to the story.
It is a remarkably well-crafted story. The first season is a massive success because it is such a good story, and it has its flaws, and especially upon replay, you see those flaws. But as an individual experience where you sit down and play the game and watch it play out and make your choices, there are very few things better in video gaming than.
So that's, so good. We're in agreement. It's the best story of Generation 7. All right, moving along.
Well, it's certainly better than Dust and Elysium Tale.
Hey, Dust is a good game. I honestly don't remember the story, but that's because I never finished it. So I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt that I might just not have gotten to. Plus, it was how many years ago was this?
Have you played Bioshock Infinite, Travis?
No, I think it was a Games with Gold, so I probably still have it on my console.
You should, because you played the first Bioshock, right?
And I believe the second one.
Okay, you definitely should play Bioshock Infinite. You don't have the same hang-ups as Andrew does with first-person shooters.
No, I do not, which you might find out later. Ooh. All right, so best,
my guess.
All right, let's move on to best music. This was a category I was very excited for once I've made my pick in.
Ooh,
this
was it Rock Band 4 for you?
Since I already picked Rock Band 3 and I don't duplicate games, but yeah, I felt like that was cheating, but I'll get into some of it when I make my pick.
All right, well, then you're not going to like my pick then, because...
Is it Rock Band?
No, I'm going with Elite Beat Agents, which...
Oh, well, see, wow. Okay, I might be able to bring my topic up earlier, but finish
okay.
Yours.
Okay, so for Andrew's benefit, Elite Beat Agents is a Nintendo DS game, which is why I was pretty sure that the DS was in this generation.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Nintendo DS was in this generation, but Andrew made the call that it wasn't, but that means we entirely skipped the DS. So,
well, it should have been in the last generation is what it comes down to. We just didn't recognize it, so that's fine. It's probably also playable on the 3DS, which is in this generation, so it's backwards compatible. Go for it.
It's Elite Beat Agents, so I'm going to allow it anyway.
You can think of Elite Beat Agents as DDR with a stylus, right? Because the DS had the little stylus on the screen. Basically, to the beat of a song, you're tapping on different parts of the screen or moving the stylus around, and you have to do it to the beat in order to pass. And it has an incredible array of music, and I believe every single one of them is a remix. I don't believe any of them are actually originals. Well, sung by the original artist.
They're remix slash covers.
Sure, whichever the appropriate term is. They're not sung by the original artist. They're sung by other people. And there are plenty of songs in there. I mean, so there's some good songs. Skater Boy, I love Skater Boy. But there are also some songs I'd never heard of before. And I went back and listened to the originals. And I'm like, this song is just not that good. But they make it much snappier and much more enjoyable in this game. And pretty much every song is in this game is memorable. And what's great about it is that a lot of the songs are paired up. There's actually a story to this game. Like these Elite Beat Agents are trying to help people. So one of them, there's like a father, a daughter who loses her father, and you're trying to help like the father's angel send a bear or something. I can't remember the exact specifics, but they're telling a story with graphics in the background to the song. And so I think that's the one with You're the Inspiration that goes along with that. And I can remember clearly some of those scenes in my head. And so it's just a really great game. Every song is great in that game. And it's a great game, too. So complete package.
So I'm going to be the hipster here and say Elite Beat Agents is fantastic. But I actually imported the original. It's not even original. Elite Beat Agents is basically a sequel. But like it's Osu Tatake Oyodan, if I'm even pronouncing that right. But so it's in Japanese. So all the songs are Japanese. So maybe they're covers. I don't even know. But it's also fantastic music. And instead of being like Elite Beat Agents, you're basically Men in Black.
Yeah.
In the original, I keep saying the original, in the first game, you're male cheerleaders. So like you're going around and you're like cheering somebody as they're grocery shopping or like helping an old lady cross. Like these ridiculous situations that you don't need to be cheerleading. And these guys are out there cheerleading with this manic music playing in a rhythm game on top.
I mean, I'll be honest, they're Men in Black, but they're also spending most of the time like dancing around. So they're kind of a male cheerleaders meet Men in Black.
Now, this was a strong contender. Well, I would have had to choose between, do I pick the Japanese game or the Elite Beat Agents as what I picked for this category, but I didn't, so. But good choice.
So Paul. Andrew's outvoted no matter what.
Yeah, I'm very outvoted, but it doesn't mean that I'm not right.
Yes, it does.
It also was an awesome use of the DS. Like,
yeah.
Some games felt like they were struggling to use the DS. This was a game that really took advantage of that style, particularly the stylus and the touchscreen, because you wouldn't want to play this with your finger, either on a tablet or something. They do that now, but I think it was a great use of the hardware. Yeah.
All right, Andrew, tell us how we're wrong.
Okay, so we're just to clarify, we're on best music, because I'm not entirely sure based on what you guys were saying there.
Yes, best music.
Okay. Best music. It's just the complete package. Just like Dust Elysium is great gameplay that happens to have a story with it.
So the best music of this generation belongs to Bastion.
Bastion.
Bastion has amazing sound design, and it is well known for its narrator that guides you and narrates as you're doing things. So you would be understandable to say, well, it's just good audio all around, but it has a soundtrack that is absolutely stunning from end to end. It's one of the few video game soundtracks that I'll happily put in and listen to as a regular CD. It's not the only one, but it is definitely among the best. And again, it comes from the land of indie, and this arguably could be the best game of the generation, but the thing that sets it apart the best and the most is the sound design and the music, so I think it belongs here, and I'll leave something else to get the best pick.
And Bastion is Supergiant, right?
Bastion is Supergiant. Supergiant Games.
So, all right, so it's my turn for best music.
Go for it.
I don't have a clip to play, but I was looking through it, and yes, I was like, Rock Band 3? Nah, that's kind of cheating, but... Well, okay, so what I was going to say, though, was I considered Rock Band 3 cheating, although, because I was like, well, I liked all these songs first. So it's kind of cheap to say that I liked them in the game. Kind of like how you movie soundtracks started having just like almost songs, random songs that weren't even in the movie type of thing. But then I was like, but I had liked Andrew's pick for me for Tony Hawk 2 as like a music. But it was different there, I agreed, because that was the first time I heard most of those songs, I think. So this game kind of combines everything. There were songs I already knew that I liked. There are licensed songs in the game. That was the first time I was hearing some of these bands and then sought the bands out. And there's also just awesome original music in it. Plus, I liked that. I liked the aesthetic of the game anyway, which is Lollipop Chainsaw.
Solid choice.
So I don't know if you guys ever actually played it or not.
Nope. I think I win. Elite Beat Agents.
But to give the quick synopsis, the Lollipop Chainsaw is you're a very scantily clad cheerleader who's using a chainsaw to destroy a whole bunch of zombies, and she has her boyfriend's decapitated head strapped to her belt.
And she's got daddy issues, too. I mean, let's not be...
So it's from Grasshopper, who also did Killer 7, and I had some of their other games.
Hellblade, Senua.
Yeah, Killer 7, No More Heroes, Shadows of the Damned. They also did the Samurai Champloo game, which I had forgot existed, but I actually played. And also had good music, because Samurai Champloo has good music, but not like this game. Just to give some of the quick hits, though, like, this is the only game, outside of a Rock Band, this is the only game where, like, I could listen to Children of Bodom, Dragon Force, Arch Enemy in a game. Like, be playing a game and be listening to some of my favorite bands was outstanding. Plus, this was the first time, and they had, like, you know, like, the Chordettes doing, like, ooh, lolly, 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 lollipop, because it's a Lollipop Chainsaw, of course. But, like, this is how I learned the band Sleigh Bells, because their song Rhythm, or Riot Rhythm is in this, and I wound up going out and buying the first two Sleigh Bells albums because of that one song in this game. But then just going and you listen to the actual soundtrack itself, which has awesome song titles. Like Viking Zombies Sail on Lightning Seas, Zombies Dance When the Drums Play. Just go look at the soundtrack list, and there's Bowel Purge. I mean, there's like fantastic song names on this. But like particularly, and I started off with that name, but Viking Zombies Sail on Lightning Seas, it sounds like a song I would just listen to without even having played the game. It just has like, it mashes together a whole bunch of different metal genres, which most of the songs do. But like, there are particular things in there, like, I'm like, hey, that sounds like this band, and that sounds like In Flames, and that sounds like this other band. I'm like, it's an outstanding, if you have to like, you have to like that style of music, though, I understand, for the original songs. You do have to like harsher, somewhat more extreme metal. But then there's also like funk songs on near the end stuff. So yeah, I thought I would struggle for best music maybe outside of Rock Band 3, but then I saw Lollipop Chainsaw. I was like, yep, I know. Because that's mostly what I remember from this game is the music. The gameplay is kind of forgettable.
So it's not the complete package like Elite Beat Agents is.
I'm pretty sure Elite Beat Agents is not the complete package either, unless those FBI agents are packing.
but say I'm trying to make a joke about the cheerleader in Complete Package, but I'm failing.
Well, one of the achievements in that game, you have to stare up our skirt too. So that's one of the reasons I'm probably not going to play this game.
It's not hard to do, I'm sure, actually.
Oh, yeah, but I do think you actually have to try it. It's not something you're going to do accidentally.
Yeah, you do. Especially at this point in my life, I would probably feel a little skeevy playing this game, but I can listen to the soundtrack without any qualms. So let's move on now to Paul for his most memorable game.
Let's talk
game.
More about how Travis feels skeevy playing video games. Okay.
No, just certain ones. Certain ones that objectify teenage girls.
Most memorable. Okay, so this is a game that's already been discussed. And I will just say, for Clementine, The Walking Dead Season 1. This is a game I am not afraid to admit that I cried at the ending of. And people who have played the game know, without a doubt, know why. And I am about 99% certain this has to do with the fact that this game came out around the exact time that I became a father to a daughter. And so things happen in this game that, I'll be honest, I considered it for story, but I don't actually remember a lot of the story to this game. I know you're running away from zombies and you've fallen with different groups of people, but what really stuck with me is the ending of the game, is the last scenes of the game, and the emotional heft packed by that exchange between a convict and somebody that he just kind of gets randomly paired together with. And I know a lot of people might pick something like The Last of Us, which has a similar dynamic. And I did play The Last of Us, but to me, for whatever reason, this one hit me harder. The way that the game ended up and what happens. And so the gameplay is pretty much non-existent, as was admitted. It's not a great game, really, but as a story and as a vehicle for emotional impact, I think The Walking Dead Season 1 is something that will stick with me for the rest of my life, I think. Done.
Yeah. Excellent choice. But yeah, and there's a good story is going to have memorable moments, so it's understandable that there's overlap in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't argue, because there are definitely moments in the Walking Dead Season 1 that are better than the whole. The whole is very good, but sometimes it just stands out. And for you, Paul, you say it's at the end. I understand that. That moment is very emotionally heavy and very significant. And yeah, absolutely going to be memorable. My memorable moment was earlier in it, but no, it was a good series, good full of memory moments. But it isn't my pick for most memorable.
Oh. And I'll before Andrew says that, I'll cut him off one quick time. It's not my memorable pick either, because I'm not duplicating games, but it's also memorable for me because it's one of the few games I played together entirely with my wife.
Yeah. We can get people who are not usually gamers to play these games in some cases, although not always. My wife was still not interested in playing these games, whereas she did play Diablo 3 with me. So.
Did either of your wives play Lollipop Chainsaw with you?
No.
Pretty sure I had to sell it before she became my wife.
I've not even played Lollipop Chainsaw myself, so that would not have been an issue. But yeah, that didn't come.
Yeah, I haven't played it either, to be clear. Only Travis is skeevy enough.
Past Travis.
It's no longer in my possession.
He's innocent now.
He just has the soundtrack and those memories.
Ooh, the memories.
My actual pick for most memorable is another oddball for me, and I'm going with Alpha Protocol. Alpha Protocol is a first-person shooter action RPG, which makes it fit right in line with something like Mass Effect, except it's quasi-real-time, not really science fiction. You play this agent of a shadow government agency going on a quest to rid the world of terrorists, and you end up doing James Bond stuff, and it's absolutely insane and nothing like any game I would ever like. And yet, it is successful because the story is great. If Dust Elysian's Tale does not have the best story, then Alpha Protocol does have the best story of the generation. And the memorable moments come at you a mile a minute. This game is just chock full of things that are incredibly memorable, from a fight scene with a druggie in Russia, to the requirements that you have to go through to get all the different endings, to the various love interests that you can go through. They're all absolutely batshit insane. To fighting a helicopter with a pistol. Yeah, you do that, and it's amazing. every single part of this game was memorable. And it was exceptionally hard for me to play because I did not have the skills for it. But I got through it anyway because I was enjoying it. And that really says something about how those moments came together for me.
I find it interesting your use of wording when you said the love interest that you go through.
Oh, yeah. No, it's James Bond shit.
I was wondering if that was an intentional wording or not.
Yeah, I remember the name, but I never actually played it, probably because it just came out with a glut of other games, and its name sounds totally generic, right? Like Alpha Protocol, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go play Gears or Borderlands or something else that I already know about now.
Alpha Protocol suffers from a lot of things. It suffers from being a shooter in a glut of shooters. It suffers from being an RPG that isn't a really amazing RPG in a lot of ways, although it does succeed exactly where it wants to be. It was published by published and developed by Obsidian, I think. Definitely developed by Obsidian, and they've done some really good RPG games. But they had Fallout New Vegas overshadowing this. It came out at a bad time, and the title is bland, and people expected it to be something different. You come into this expecting Bald Space Marine kind of games, and you get what is either a really interesting and thoughtful satire of spy genres and corporate corruption and government problems, or actually, I'm not even sure what else this could be. I definitely see it as a satire, but I am one of the few people who sees it that way. So I don't know if I'm just reading things into this game that aren't there, or if I just enjoyed this game enough to see it when other people didn't care.
I don't even remember hearing about this game. I'm a little surprised you didn't go with Oxenfree. I thought you might go with Oxenfree, based on previous conversations.
Not this generation.
Xbox One, that's right.
Yeah, never mind. It's next generation, because Oxenfree 2 is coming out this year, I think.
I haven't done my research for next generation. Oxenfree is obviously a game I've spent a lot of time involved with for a variety of reasons, but I'm not sure it'll make my list next generation either. It might. Not going to tip my hand one way or the other. It has a lot I could like about it. But again, that's a game where I came in expecting to be something completely different and was surprised by where it
went. Yeah, don't pull Travis and tell us what you're going to pick.
I'm shocked that you guys still didn't know I was going to pick Symphony of the Night. But I was confirming this. Alpha Protocol was on the cover of the April 2008 issue of Game Informer. So it was popular enough to get the cover of Game Informer back in magazines were still a thing.
Being released. And so people were like, they're hyping it. But as soon as it comes out, people are like, oh my God, what the hell is this? This isn't what you promised us, Game Informer. You said this was going to be some awesome shooter game. What is this bullshit?
But considering, I mean, other things that were in this magazine issue were Guitar Hero, Aerosmith, and Rainbow Six Vegas 2. I mean, neither of those are standout games necessarily, but they were established franchises, and Alpha Protocol still got the cover over them. So, I'm trying to hype up your own choice, Andrew. I'm not. Okay. I'm not detracting from you.
Thank you for the help.
All right. So we'll move on to my most memorable. And apparently, Paul and I flip flopped. I didn't pick BioShock Infinite. I picked BioShock. So give Andrew a point. Yeah, give Andrew a point. This game is. Would you kindly alone would make this game memorable? Like it or not, as a story. Turning twister and like it's memorable. You do not forget that moment, because I think Paul might have soured on that moment as an actual twist. I don't know.
Okay. I agree. I have no problem with this.
Okay, but like from the first time you see a big daddy to the first time you see a little sister to when you I think the first time you see a big daddy, like I'm not trying to spoil anything. Like I mean, it's you're like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to fight that at some point. Like it's. Because you're seeing it through a window, I'm pretty sure, and you're like, oh my goodness. But the opening scene of just, like, you're crash landing in the ocean, and you're surrounded by fire, and you're like, what the hell is going on? And you, like, have to find where you have to swim to find the entrance into the underwater city, and then there's Atlas, and I don't know if it was, I'm sure it was a thing beforehand, but anytime I hear, like, grainy 1930s music, I immediately think of this game. Whenever I hear that type of aesthetic, I know it's like a horror trope and things like that, but like it makes me think of this game at this point and just the powers you have in this game. And I'm sure, again, other games maybe had done this, but this was like the fact that you could lure an enemy into water and shoot your electricity at the water and it would electrocute the enemy. Like environmental effects like that were again, maybe not new, but this game like is very memorable to me for those type of aspects to it. So story, characters, moments, the gameplay, like everything of this game is so memorable and is burned in my mind.
And the morality aspect of the Little Sisters, right? Every time you defeated Big Daddy, you had the choice to be a horrible monster and harvest them for their Adam, I think is what it was called. I don't even remember.
And
make yourself more powerful to basically level up more, or to instead release them and get a smaller bonus, but, you know, be a good person and not kill them.
Right. And I think, slight spoiler, but I think you get to see them all in the room at the end of all the ones you've saved or something like that.
Depending on your morality level at the end.
Right. Depending how many you saved. Yes. It could be an empty room, or it could be full of little sisters.
Or it could be a graveyard.
But even that's memorable, yeah. Right? I mean, like that actually had a minimal impact on the ending, but it has an impact on the ending, your choices there. So as opposed to something maybe like Knights of the Old Republic, right? Like I think you got the same ending no matter what you did.
Sounds about right. I think some people could be killed, I think, in Knights of the Republic.
Right. Not like Bioshock had a different ending either, but like that, besides that one little scene that I remember, and that's the whole point of this category, is like, I remember that little tiny aspect of this game, but yeah. And at the time, the graphics were outstanding, like the first time you go through one of the tubes and you're like, oh yeah, I am underwater, and there's some gigantic fish swimming over, and like there's lights, and I can see the rest of the city below me, and all that stuff. And
I think the graphics still hold up. Yeah, obviously it's not top of the line, but I don't think it's embarrassing.
Yeah. So yeah, just this whole game from top to bottom was extremely memorable. Probably a strong contender for personal best, honestly. Which
Andrew's celebrating.
Oh, I don't know. Well, Andrew made a motion, but all right. Speaking of personal best,
I'm happy I got a point. For this game that I've never played and I've heard so much about.
So, Travis, so you actually provide an excellent, excellent transition for my personal best, which is Mass Effect 2.
Yes. Well, kind of moot, but I still get a point.
You want an incredible intro. In the very opening minutes of the game of Mass Effect 2, your ship is attacked by an unknown force and completely destroyed, and Commander Shepard, the main character from the first game, gets thrown out into space and killed. That happens in the opening moments. And you want an incredible ending with multiple different branching paths. The ending is a suicide mission, which everyone's talking about the entire time, about how you're all building up to a suicide mission, where literally every single character in your party can die, and any combination of them. And this is the middle game of a trilogy, which means that if Shepard dies, then you kind of lose, but the game still ends. And it's like, it's not like game over, like you get to like play it again. It's like game over, the game is over and you kind of died. But everyone else.
Right. It's kind of like the endings to Chrono Trigger or something. Like you could finish it in different ways and it's not game over or anything. It's
right.
You finished the game that way. Now go play it again.
The story ends in Mass Effect 2. But the game goes on to Mass Effect 3, and they have to tie up all these loose ends of which characters can be alive and which ones can't. Mass Effect 2 is, in my mind, one of the greatest games ever. Mass Effect was pretty good, but it was buggy as hell. It had too many RPG elements for my liking, in the sense of managing inventory and kind of calculating which weapons to use and everything. Mass Effect 2 is a far more streamlined process. The combat was sharp and it felt good. It's a fun game to play, just like as a shooter.
Did they get rid of the Mako?
They replaced it with something else. Yeah, there's still like something.
Okay.
It's a hovercraft instead. But yes, the Mako they got rid of. But the biotics are powerful and impactful, and the engineering abilities, and there's close combat. There's different character classes. The Vanguard is a whole lot of fun, being able to charge forward to things and doing close combat. You can play as a sniper. There's all sorts of different ways of playing the game. It's got the signature Bioshock, like, great dialogue and great character development. There are so many memorable characters, from Morden and Garrus, and just it's a great story. As I said, like it kicks off with this amazing shocking event, and it ends with a suicide mission, which was, I mean, that was a contender for most memorable for me, is the suicide mission. That entire thing where you have to make all of these incredible tough decisions about who to send where and who holds the line here, who has to use their biotics to shield things here, who do you send back with the people that you've rescued to send back. And depending on if you make the wrong decisions, then people die. It's just a really great game overall. The music is strong. About the only bad thing you can say is it's got this stupid mining mini game where you have to like scan planets and launch probes, and it's so incredibly awful. And of course, Andrew would like that.
That's the part Andrew wants to play. He just wants that part.
Let me go mining.
Yeah. Although there is a nice little Easter egg, I believe it's in this game, where if you go to Uranus and launch a probe, then the computer says, "Really?" Because probing Uranus. Okay. But it's just Mass Effect 2 is simply an incredible game, and it's a game that I'll just leave it at that. It's just an incredible game.
So this is kind of meant sarcastic, I guess, but so did you like Star Wars Rogue One?
The movie? Yeah, I did enjoy Rogue One, yeah.
Okay, because you're talking about, like, it's all leading up to a suicide mission. Just reminded me of that's, everybody knew that's what Rogue One
was. And I'll be honest, the more that I think back to a lot of the Star Wars movies, the higher Rogue One goes in my Star Wars rankings. Because there are so many flaws in a lot of the other Star Wars movies where Rogue One really doesn't have any. It's just a really overall solid movie, and there's just a lot of enjoyable characters and enjoyable elements to it, and it ties in together really well.
Darth Vader is a total badass for a brief second, for a very short period of time, but that's all you need him.
It is kind of sad that that's the best representation of Darth Vader we've ever gotten, and it was for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, less is more, right? And I don't know, even the space battles, like, it's, I feel like it's one of the best space battles that they've had in a Star Wars movie too.
Right. Okay. I didn't mean to derail us from the video games, but just when you said culminating in a suicide mission, that's the first thing, and sci-fi, that's the first thing I thought of.
I have to ask, though, obviously you like Mass Effect 2 as the better game all around. Would you say that Mass Effect 2 also had the better story, or do you think Mass Effect 1 had the better story? Because this is something that I've heard from other people who really like the series, that they think overall the story in Mass Effect 1 was better, but Mass Effect 2 was a better game because it was much more streamlined, they got rid of all the bugs, etc.
Yeah, that's a great question. So Mass Effect, and this is something I should have brought up, it's a space opera, right? It's an epic, like, giant...
It's a space story. It's not a space opera. I'm going to nitpick.
It's space opera, and the universe is threatened by these, you know, giant machines that come through every however many thousands of years to wipe out all life and everything. And Mass Effect 1, I think, as a kind of introduction, kind of a prelude, does a really good job of setting things up and setting up that story and introducing you to the stakes and giving you a sense of dread about Sovereign and the Reapers. Reapers or Reavers? I can never remember which one they are. But anyway, this threat that is coming, and it does a lot of world building. And so I think I might have to go with Mass Effect. And in contrast to that, Mass Effect 2, while I love a lot of the individual stories, like, you know, all these missions you're doing with your crew, and the suicide mission is amazing and everything else, at the end of the day, it's like, I feel like this didn't really change all that much. It almost felt like stalling, like there was no development in the overall story that Mass Effect 1 had kicked off. So it's a tough thing to answer. The whole subplot with the collectors and everything and their base, it seems almost unnecessary. So I guess I'd go with Mass Effect 1 having the better story, but it does have a lot of other flaws that make it Mass Effect 2 the better game.
Fair enough. That was kind of where I was expecting to go, which is why I picked Mass Effect 2, although I was expecting you to flip it on me and make me wrong.
I want to make you sweat.
I was definitely sweating. So for my pick then, for best game of the generation, this one was very, very tough for me. I'm sorry, Paul, it's not Diablo 3. This is one... You're fair in criticizing me, because this I saw something this week, last week, where a guy put a review on Steam. The review is just, it's okay for a game he had 5,000 hours in. I have played Diablo 3 on three different systems for hundreds of hours, and so how can it not be my best game? Because it's just okay. It's not that
good. You have too much time on your hands.
I play it because it is enjoyable, because I like that style of game, because it is fast-paced and action-filled and fun to do. It is a fun game, but Diablo 2 is so much better. And there is another game that is a much better Diablo 3 than Diablo 3. And Travis was right. It's Titan Quest. But it's not my pick either. Sorry, Travis. Because as much
I still feel vindicated.
Yeah.
My pick was better than Paul's.
Titan Quest is a better Diablo 3 than Diablo 3. But I've played more Diablo 3 than I've played a Titan Quest, just because Titan Quest wasn't available where I wanted to play when I wanted to play it. I played many, many hours of Titan Quest on PC before I moved over to playing on mostly Xbox exclusively. But Diablo 3 came with me, so I played a lot more Diablo 3. The best game of this generation is Rayman Legends.
Wow.
Wait, what is it?
Rayman Legends. So this is interesting, come up with what I brought up about, not to cut you off immediately, but like I didn't play that in this generation. I played it in the next generation.
I did too. I played it on Xbox One rather than on Xbox 360, but it released on the Xbox 360 and is in this generation in terms of everything else. It's right at that cusp. It's 2013. It's passing over. And so it's at the very top end of what can play on the Xbox 360. For me, I'm sure it was on the PS3 as well. But what it does in terms of being a modern platformer is top notch. It has interactive gameplay with daily leaderboards and weekly runs, and level design that is top-notch, music that is amazing. It could have reasonably been a top choice for best music. I don't think it's as good as Bastion by far, but it is very, very good music. And the music levels, the ones that are specifically designed to be played as music, are incredible.
I will replay Castle Rock all day, every day.
Just for fun. It's
just for fun. Yeah.
And when a game is that good on so many levels, and when it is so enjoyable and such a complete package as a gameplay experience that brings you joy, that is when a game is doing really. And so Rayman Legends takes the cake and is the best game of the generation because it remembers that it's a game.
And like I told you, like, I mean, I didn't start playing this until basically this year. And I'm shocked at how active the daily challenges and the weekly challenges are, which just speaks to how well this game is holding up.
I think it's still the best Rayman game. I've played Origins and a couple other ones, and they know how to do level design, and the characters are great, so they've been good all along, and I just didn't know about it. But this was also my introduction to this series, and it is beautiful. I can't wait to see what they do for the next generation, because I'm sure it's going to be amazing when they cut around to it eventually.
I might have played one Rayman game for a couple of minutes, but yeah, this is my introduction to the series. I mean, it's a great place to play it, right? I mean, it's the culmination of like platforming up to that point.
This is one of your least bad picks. I played it. It seems an incredibly polished game. Every level that I've played, I've kind of enjoyed, but I don't know if it's, I guess it's just not my cup of tea, because I haven't really gone back to it. I've played the first couple worlds, I think. I don't even know if that's the right terminology, but yeah, it's fine. It's okay.
It's no Diablo 3. It's okay. And it strikes a perfect balance between you can mostly play it kind of casually and get through, and you'll progress and everything, and you can play it, you know, completionist to get every single lum and every single... Right, that's what the little blue guys are called.
The blues guys are teensies. The lums are yellow.
Teensies. You can't get all the lums. There's infinite amount of lums.
You could get all the lums, but yeah, on any given level,
Correct. Right. But the whole point is to get teensies, and that's. But yeah, and you could play it like to perfect your runs through the level or something if you want to do something like that. Yeah, there's.
Or just speedrun everything and you know beat this level that takes me a minute and a half in 10 seconds. I see people do that. I'm like, what?
So this is a personal question for me. Is there any gameplay difference between the different characters and different costumes? Or is it all just skins?
No, it is skins. They all play the same. But apparently there is some very minor difference where one of the characters is a hair faster and therefore it's the most popular choice in the speedruns. Whether that's actually true and it's like a couple of frames faster, or if it's just you know, that's what people feel and they all the top speedrunners use them, I don't know. It's hard to say at that point.
Yeah, because I mean that's another cool aspect of the game, is just how many like costumes you can dress Rayman and all his friends in. But anyway, enough hyping your game.
let's hype yours.
So I don't know if this is a controversial pick, honestly. I could do some runners-up, but I'll save them
for... If it's not what I picked for you, then it is a controversial pick.
So it is in a series, and I can't even put all the numbers on one on two hands.
Oh, God, is it Final Fantasy?
It's Final Fantasy 13, baby.
13 or 13-2?
13. I will limit it. I will just say 13. I played both. 13, I don't know if there was actually a counter in it or not, but if there was, I'm pretty sure I 100%ed this game. Like, I absolutely loved this game. And I did not care that it's linear and this and that. Like, I loved everything about this game just so much. I mean, it was one of the last RPGs I've actually played, because I played it while my wife was pregnant with our first child. So she was sleeping a lot. So I had a lot of time to play RPGs. And that's one reason I could 100% a game like this. But
and now you don't have that time anymore.
Now I don't have that time. But yeah, just like the character and yeah, the cast. I mean, I wrote their names down so I could remember. But yeah, Lightning, Snow, Vanille, Saz, Hope, Yunfeng, Sarah.
You know, I didn't have to write down the names of the Mass Effect 2 characters because they were memorable.
Oh, I knew Lightning and Snow. And I knew Sarah. I needed to refresh my memory on like the names of the people. I could picture Vanille and Zaz and all these people. I just couldn't remember all their names.
You cannot forget Vanille once you've met Vanille. But I can absolutely understand forgetting her name.
But plus, I played X2, so of course I'm going to know Vanille and all the female characters.
Oh, all the female characters, huh?
Yeah, because 13-2 is, if I remember right, is like that, or maybe I'm conflating with X2, where X2 is just the female cast members.
I've only just started 13-2, so I can't tell you, honestly. I've not played enough of it.
So, but yeah, I did, and probably one of the last games... Probably the only game for this generation, because I hadn't bought it, but I bought the strategy guide for this game, like after I beat it, so I could actually get everything in the game and keep going and fill out every character and just battle over and over and over to defeat the great monsters on whatever planes. There's some big plains area that you could go battle monsters on, and yeah, I don't. It's a Final Fantasy game. But I don't know if it's I don't know if it's controversial, because I think when it came out, it was kind of like 10, right? Everybody was kind of hating on it. It's like, oh, it's just a straight line through the story or something like that. But it's like
you're fighting through long hallways, yeah.
And right,
it's definitely more of that. But I think people were okay with it more than they were in 10. I think 10, it was such a change from the open world they'd had in the other games.
Right.
10 to 13 is like, okay, this is just what we're doing now. You get used to it.
Right. Plus, I didn't play 12. I think that was the previous generation, I think. Final Fantasy started getting weird after 10, right? Because 11's multiplayer, 12's I don't know. I don't even know. It's like a whole bunch of royal families or something. I never played it.
12 is a very complicated game, and it doesn't fit with the way that people usually like to play their Final Fantasies, because it brings active battling to a different level. You don't control your characters as much. You set up attacking styles that they will use, and it takes the control away from the players in a certain way, which makes the battling a lot easier, and it's the way RPGs are now in a lot of ways, but it wasn't what people wanted at that time, so I think 12 is largely forgotten. And I don't think that's fair, because it has a great story.
But to that point, if from what I remember the combat system of 13, I mean, it inherited a lot of 12's... Like, you're not controlling each... Well, I think you could, but it really slowed combat down if you took control of everybody. So you are largely just saying, like, hey, I want you to be attacker, I want you to be defense, I want you to be healer. Go do your stuff. And, like, it just goes through the active time battle kind of on its own. So, but it's massively entertaining to still just sit there and watch the battles, because it's so dynamic and the camera work's actually good and all that stuff. So it was a very enjoyable game to me. It's the last game I put that much time into a single game.
Well,
I have criticisms of Final Fantasy 13, but they're mostly on story. I think it was a much better game than a lot of people who criticized it gave it credit for, but the story was lacking for me, and that's always disappointing for me when Final Fantasies fail on that front. So, especially coming after such a strong couple of previous Final Fantasies. Right. But and it worked for you, so that's great.
I mean, I liked the story, but this one I definitely came I definitely came for the gameplay on this one.
I can't feel too bad. I don't think I had Final Fantasy even on my radar for you. And I didn't have Rayman Legends on the radar for Andrew, so.
Andrew picked a platformer and two shooter games. This is a weird generation for Andrew.
To be fair, both of those shooter games were also RPGs.
Okay.
What was the other one? Alpha yes. Protocol? Was that the shooter?
Alpha Protocol and Borderlands.
Borderlands 2. But not a mule in sight, man. Impressive.
Hey, I got Dust and Bastion. I got my indies covered.
No, okay, but Dust is a good game.
All
right.
Oh, come on. They're all good games.
I didn't actually play Bastion, so I'm not bad-mouthing Bastion.
You need to fix that. That's an amazing game. Fine.
I will go play
Bioshock eventually if you play Bastion.
Is it on Switch? No.
It probably is.
I do still have my 360 floating around. I asked because Hades is Supergiant as well. That's their...
Is it?
So they're still making good... Yeah. Okay, now you're going to go play Hades.
Yeah, I am. I was interested in playing Hades as before. I did not know it was Supergiant.
Yeah, I'm
I've been I'll usually double... paying very close attention to the other games because Pyre was something that looked amazing, and Transistor, their second game, is just so good.
Yeah, publisher, Supergiant Games. Developer, Supergiant Games.
Developed by Supergiant. All right, yeah. I need to get on Hades. I did not know that
there
was...
There you go.
Now, the interesting thing is that, of course, Xbox is my platform of choice, and Bastion came out on Xbox 360 first. It's been ported everywhere else. But apparently, Supergiant and Microsoft had some bad times. They did not like the interaction of the publication process that they had with Microsoft, and they have refused to publish their game on Microsoft products basically ever since. There was a Bastion re-release done for the Xbox One, but other than that, no Supergiant game has been released on Xbox.
Hmm. Well, it's available for Windows, which is technically Microsoft. But...
I think both of you should just play. Both of you should just play Bioshock Infinite.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure it's one of the, because you never lose your golds on games with gold. Wow.
Not for the Xbox 360. You would for your Xbox Ones if you don't keep your gold up. You wouldn't be able to play
them. Right. It's downloaded to my console anyway. So although digital rights, they could take it away if they wanted to, I guess anyway. So, all right. I guess we've already moved into the worthy of discourse anyway, and I completely changed generations by mentioning Hades. So if Paul wants to bring us back to this generation with a few more games
I have
list.
So many, because this is such a strong generation.
This was a very, very strong generation. I played a ridiculous number of games in this generation. So,
well, then I'll jump in with just two quick categories. I did have Metroidvania as a category of things, and I had Dust underneath that, and there's another game called Outland. I don't know if you played
Outland was on my short list for you.
Yeah, Outland was pretty good, too. So they were both on my worthy discourse list. So there you go. Dust was on my list, believe it or not. This was also, to me, like the beginning of the... As much as Rayman, we said you could play it either way. You could play it as a really casual game, or you could play it as a more pro game. There are some really punishing platformers out. I think this might be the beginning of the punishing pro or punishing platformer with like N Plus and Splosion Man, Spelunky, and Super Meat Boy.
Yep, all those are on like, this. As is Blueberry Kingdom, which is just absolutely insane.
Yeah, so this is the generation. I think they kind of the indies kind of took the platform and really started iterating on it. The Super Meat Boy, I think, kind of started that. But
Super Meat Boy is probably the most polished of a lot of those.
It's the one that stuck up if you weren't paying attention to indies, right?
Right.
You pay attention to indies more than any of us, so it's the one that stuck up first.
You and I played N Plus, and what I found out when I did a little more research on N Plus, because I was looking at going back to it, of course now we have N Plus Plus in the newer generations, so they've iterated it on it again, but N Plus was actually a sequel as well. There was an original game, N, which was basically the same kind of concept, it just was even less refined. But N Plus is very unrefined in that it's, you know, very, very simple stick figure ninja guy running through very hard platform levels and dying a lot.
Yep.
All right. So, should I just dive right in? How many do I get?
Go for it, Paul.
Sure.
Five. Go for five.
Yes, I have five. All right.
You're the one fading. You're the one fading from a vaccine.
All right, I'll make this quick. I can't believe none of the Gears of War has made it on here because it's they're a lot of fun. I understand that they're not everyone's cup of tea, Andrew. But the whole...
I've played them because of you, though.
I mean, so the cover system, it really adds a new... Like, I actually had kind of gotten out of shooters. I basically haven't played any of the Halo games because they weren't really... I didn't feel like I was any good at them, but the whole cover system of Gears of War really added to me felt like a level of strategy and tactics to the game. And Horde mode is just so much fun playing multiplayer. Like I mentioned before, that was a strong contender for fun with multiplayer, fun with friends.
So just doing a quick Google, I must have played at least Gears 2. I'm thinking I played Gears 3, but Horde mode did not exist until Gears 2.
And I know I don't think it existed in Gears 1. And Heavy Rain, it's a PlayStation 3 game by Quantic Dream or something like that.
Yeah, that is a really excellent addition that I'm glad you brought up, because it did not make my radar. For whatever reason, I missed it as I was going through my games. I've played that one, and it's definitely worthy of this course. It has got a lot of problems, but it revitalized the idea of trying to make games serious art, even though it fails miserably.
So I almost put Quantic Dream's previous game, I believe, Indigo Prophecy, on my list.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it has some serious problems to it, but there were definitely some moments that were super memorable. Moments where the combination of like the music and the sound and the stuff that was going on, like, it got my heart racing. And I think there's a scene where you had to decide whether to pull a gun on somebody or not, and it's really impressive how they managed to manipulate the emotions. And it had an interesting story that kind of falls apart at the end, but it could have been really great. But it did do a lot of things really well, even if it did fall apart in a lot of other ways. Travis, you had something?
No, I went to the Quantic Dream Wikipedia page to make sure that I was thinking of the right company, that Heavy Rain, they made Heavy Rain and Indigo Prophecy. And the Wikipedia page doesn't list Indigo Prophecy. It lists Fahrenheit. And then as a footnote, says Fahrenheit is retitled as Indigo Prophecy for North American release. So that's what I was making.
Those Frenchies.
That's what I was making a face for. It's like, no, I know they made Indigo Prophecy. I'm not wrong. And it's because it got renamed. So there you go.
All right.
That almost made my Indigo Prophecy almost made my memorable list. But I didn't remember quite as much as clearly Bioshock.
Number three is The Orange Box. And again, I can't believe this didn't make my list anywhere. But I don't quite remember all the different games that were included, but it was an incredible value. I remember that. And
it's Team Fortress 2. Half-Life, one of the Half-Lives. I don't know which one because I can't tell them apart.
I think it's like episode one and or something, Portal. Right?
I thought it was actually Half-Life 1, Half-Life 2, Half-Life 2
episode 1.
Episode 1 was that like the add-on, Team Fortress, and then Portal.
It could be all the Half-Lives. It could well be. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, because I thought it was 5 games.
Yeah, well, the important thing is Portal is in there. And Portal is one of my...
Correct.
And actually, like, which... I don't want to sell short the other ones, because Half-Life, as I've mentioned before, and Half-Life 2 and all those are great games. But Portal is just simply amazing. And the puzzle aspect of it, the humor. I mean, who can forget GLaDOS and The Cake is a Lie and the ending song. It's just a really great game.
I tried playing the end song for my kids, and they're like, what the hell is this? Why are you making us listen to this? I'm like, come on.
A quick throwback to a previous episode. I think I said I was going to listen to that. God, what was it? Is that horror song? Veronica something or another? Veronica's theme or from Silent Hill or something?
Oh, yeah. A theme of Laura
that
or something like that?
Did not affect me at all. I was like, what? This is awful.
It might be... the memories of Silent Hill 2 that drive that song from, just like your memories of Civilization drive your Baba Yaga song or whatever it is that has no emotional impact on me.
That's just an objectively great song. But I feel like, if you just threw somebody into GLaDOS without any kind of introduction, they'd be like, what the hell is this?
So as much as I like Portal, I think I probably have great memories playing it. I probably have even fonder memories of playing Portal 2 with one of our friends.
Yeah, and I actually have Portal 2.
That's how nerdy we are, people. I played Portal 2 at a week-long bachelor party.
I mean, to be fair, that bachelor party is why a lot of games are on my tag. It's your fault that Rock Band was there, and Rock Band's on my tag, and I'll never get rid of it. And it's Paul's fault that I've got Gears and Gears 2 there. I mean, I was going to get Gears on anyway. Gears 2 is on there, and I'm So, that bachelor party did a number on me.
Bet you had NBA Ballers and WWE All-Stars and all sorts of fantastic games.
And the last...
Those didn't make the tag, but DJ Hero 2 did.
That's Aaron's fault.
Well, maybe it was DJ Hero. I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, that was that. I would rather play DJ Hero, but it's very hard.
And speaking of expensive peripherals, man, that you can't use for, you can literally use for no other game.
It is for DJ Hero and DJ Hero 2.
And my last worthy of discourse is XCOM Enemy Unknown, which I'm a huge fan of the old XCOM games. And this is takes everything that made those old XCOM games great and gussies it up for a new generation. And it takes that formula of, you know, not wanting your precious little squad mates to die and getting so frustrated when the 90%, you know, shot misses and somehow the aliens manage to hit you behind a tree or something like that. And it's really well balanced and it's got an okay story. It's got a story, let's just put it at that. But really, like, the you're playing for the gameplay. And it's one of those things where once I start a campaign, I just it's kind of like a Civilization. Once you start playing, it's always just one more turn, and you end up playing until like 3 a.m. and you're like, wow, what the hell just happened? And it's just so much fun.
I love the XCOM games. I have a really hard time with this generation telling and remembering the difference between Enemy Unknown and the other
Enemy
one.
Within.
Enemy Within, right. Because the naming convention is just really, really awkward. And I think there's a huge disservice to it. You know, names matter. We talked about Alpha Protocol's name being a problem later on. There's a game in Next Generation called Stories, The Path of Destinies, which is a really good game. But it's such a bad name that no one ever thinks about it or wants to play it. Because it's like, what a bland game. What a bland game that must be, because what a bland name it is. And it's sad that that's the case, but I do find myself so confused about it that it turns me off even playing them.
Yeah, I won't lie. I completely blanked on when I was talking about the previous XCOM games of what the first XCOM game was. It's like UFO Defense is, I think, what it's called. Yeah,
I think that's called, yeah. But it's yeah, XCOM.
To me, XCOM is just XCOM.
And this is XCOM, but this is XCOM 2, but they didn't want to name it XCOM 2, so they can name XCOM 2.
It took ballet.
Well, but that is why the aliens are so hard to shoot. They're very good dancers.
But actually, though, when I was looking through the list of games, I was like, oh, I know I played an XCOM. Which one did I play? I clicked on it. I was like, I played the blue one. That's how I knew which one I played, because Enemy Within, I think, is yellow, and Enemy Unknown, whatever it's even called, is blue.
Well,
is like,
and
I know for I
the complicated things and going along with our theme is that there's a, I don't want to say apparently, there is a very good expansion to Enemy Within called War of the Chosen, which adds a lot of cool functionality, which makes it almost feel like as different a game as Enemy Within was compared to Enemy Unknown, right? Like, it's weird how, like, the lines are blurred between... The difference between StarCraft and StarCraft 2 was just, like, huge. Like, no one will ever look at StarCraft and mistake it for StarCraft 2 or vice versa. But the difference between Wings of Liberty and Legacy of the Void, it's almost impossible to tell. And it's the same way with XCOM Enemy Unknown or Enemy Within or War of the Chosen. Like, you could easily glance at it and have no idea which game it is, which is interesting, I guess, is the only way to put it.
Yeah, there's a XCOM-like game next generation that... probably won't make my list, so don't pick it.
Okay, well,
I think I'm already lost anyway. I don't think there's any way I can catch up at this point.
It's kind of a shocking game in a way, in its way. So there you go, teaser for to listen to Generation 8. What game shocked Travis?
All right. Lollipop Chainsaw.
Number 7 will shock you. No, that shocked Travis's wife. What is this doing in your game collection?
All right, anyone else? Andrew, you got
right, Andrew. Discourse?
I have some worthy of discourse. I don't need to mention Titan Quest because Travis mentioned it for me, and I've already said that it is the best sequel to Diablo 2 that you could have had. But there is another one, there is a twin, and that's Path of Exile. It's a free-to-play Diablo-style game that harkens to Diablo 2 instead of being Diablo 3-style, and does a really good job. I've played put a lot of time into it. I will probably put a lot more because I need to go back. It's something that I need to put back on. Apparently another season has just started up. They've done season stuff and they're working on Path of Exile 2, so I'm looking forward to that. It is my style of game, not for everyone, but if you want more Diablo, there's some place to be.
And
as a free-to-play game, making it work free-to-play is...
And I assume, because I think the first one was this generation, I assume you also played Torchlight?
Oh, yes. Torchlight fits in either this generation or last, depending, probably this generation. Torchlight 2 is also in this generation. I've played pretty much all the Torchlights. I've spent most of my time Torchlight 1. I think it was very fun, but it's really, really simple. It's like it was a side project for the people at Blizzard North after they got done and didn't have the resources to put together to make a big game.
Right. It's like, yeah, it's Diablo light, kind of.
It's very light, which doesn't mean it's bad. Again, Torchlight, in many ways, better than Diablo. Not to rag on Paul's pick, because it's not like I haven't put a lot of time into Diablo 3. It was a reasonable guess for me, even if it ended up.
Yes, 0 for 2.
But it was okay.
0 for 3, since you also didn't guess Diablo, which was the one on the
list. Did I not guess?
It was the one Diablo. I thought he did pick Diablo. I thought he did pick Diablo 2.
Maybe he did. I've forgotten. So I'm assuming that you did, because your score in the case you didn't.
I either picked Diablo 2 or Kingdom Hearts. Those are the two I had written down.
I think because you got burned by Diablo.
Yeah, I think
so. I got the two that you didn't pick, and this is one that you did.
Yep.
And I got the one he did.
Grand, wonderful. I think I picked Guitar Hero for Travis too.
Yeah. So
last generation,
and it was Guitar Hero 2.
I'll just mention this one very briefly because I don't think it needs a whole lot. But Poker Night at Inventory is a game that Telltale made on their downtime. And, you know, poker games aren't very hard, but what makes Poker Night at the Inventory so good as a series of games, because it's actually two different games, is it's taking the characters they had licensed to and telling cool stories. Because poker is not about the game, necessarily. The stats of what hand's going to win don't matter. It's about what you're doing while you're playing the game. You're talking. You're telling stories. And so you get to play poker against these characters, and they're telling stories between themselves and with you. And it is just great. I could have picked this for best story.
You get to play against Penny Arcade and Homestar Runner.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
Really good stuff. And again, these are just downtime games, so throwaway games in a lot of ways. But in a lot of ways, also games that I enjoyed much more than real games that people put a lot more effort into. Speaking of games that were real games put a lot more effort into, I have to talk about my disappointment in Spore. Spore was supposed to be the game that was going to end all 4X God games and merge everything into one super game, and I bought the hype. And then I started getting worried because the DRM was bad and EA can't publish this stuff unless it's going to make tons of money. I'm like, I don't care. I'll pay the money. I won't have to deal with the DRM thing. I'll buy it at launch. And it was just, it burned me so bad. But Spore remains, for me, just because of that, a sore spot in all of gaming. Most memorable gaming of the generation could well be Spore. It hurts. And yet Spore still has some people who really like it. It's just the mechanics are so far from what it should have been. Maybe they finally patched it and made it better. Another oddball for me, because I do love the oddballs, Kinect Disneyland Adventures. The Kinect was largely a failure. You know, they wanted to emulate the success that the Wii had in motion games and real-world spaces. Kinect was a camera that sort of tracked what you did. Most of the games that played with Kinect were variations of sports and activity games. They were fine. I have a lot of them that I have enjoyed over time. Kinect Disneyland Adventures simulates the experience of going to Disneyland, and it does it remarkably. It puts you into a one-to-one version, scale model, cartoony Disneyland, where you get to ride rides, which are activities that are the sports games you play and other Kinect games, while also being in the park and getting to explore it. If you play Kinect Disneyland Adventures and then go to Disneyland, you will know how to navigate the park. You will know where all the attractions are. I think that is an incredible use of the technology, and for something that is maligned a little bit, the Kinect, I think this was perhaps the best example of it being used.
Seems like, although, just to be fair, Sony also tried to emulate the Wii by putting in motion controls in games.
They just never had any success, as far as I can tell.
But Kinect also, it sold like gangbusters, to even if it turned out to be a failure. But it also started, I think it came out at the time where people were starting to worry about privacy, and putting a camera on your TV was starting to be something people might not necessarily want to do.
And a microphone.
And a microphone. Because you could literally turn your console on, right?
That was Xbox One's version.
Oh, okay.
The 360 was not that sophisticated. The camera and the microphone were not always on. They were only on when the console was already on. But yeah, the Xbox One, you could turn your console on, which means it had to be always listening, and people didn't like that so much. And the Xbox One had to have the Kinect at launch, which was a huge drawback because it was $100 extra than the cost of the Xbox One. And it just didn't work. But the technology behind the Kinect, especially the original, the 360 Kinect, is still being used for a lot of things. It's the cameras and the way that it senses things in three dimensions so well is being used in a lot of medical devices. They're like, hey, I need something to put together a cheap medical scanning camera. I'll just hack together some Kinects. And they do that, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, and there were some... The games always felt like experiments, kind of. I never played Kinect Disney Adventures, but something like A Child of Eden, I think it was, where it was kind of like Rez. I know I just named two esoteric games.
No, but
it was
kind of like which one you're talking about.
It was kind of like Rez, but you use your hands to do the motions. But it always felt like I could do way better at this if I just had a controller in my hand. But you're missing the whole unique aspect of, I mean, you kind of feel like a Jedi, which I don't know if the Kinect Star Wars game was well received or not, which is a shame because that's something else that was perfectly made for.
Yeah, I think part of the problem that the Kinect games had as a series of games was that they couldn't be big budget games that they needed to utilize and become awesome because they were going to be limited to the Xbox. Very, very specific things. So you could only sell a third of the copies as you could a controller-based game where you could easily port the commands to the controller buttons. And that limited in of sales means limited budget, and limited budget means limited capacity to actually make a good game. That's why I think Kinect Disneyland Adventure is the standout of it.
Right, and I think there was something when I looked at the best-selling games for like Xbox 360, I think I was shocked to find some Kinect. Was there Kinect games in there? But it was like, oh, well, it's because if you bought a Kinect, you automatically got Kinect Sports or something like that.
Right, it was Kinectimals or Kinect Adventures probably.
Kinect Adventures, that's right, that was the pack-in. But I think Kinect Sports, but I think it was riding off of the wave of Wii Sports.
Yeah.
People were like, oh, well, I don't have a Wii, but I have an Xbox, so let me
And
buy
Kinect
this.
Sports is a really good Kinect game as well. If you want an activity-based Kinect game, it's probably the best.
Right, and like I liked the soccer game in it. That's the one I remember the most. And we played a lot of Just Dance, or not Just Dance, Dance Central.
I got one more worthy of discourse, and I'll make it really, really quick. It's the game of the generation that we haven't talked about yet. It's Minecraft.
Hmm. We're too old for that.
It is.
We're too old for that shit. Or no, wait, what's the Danny Glover line?
But just like I threw in World of Warcraft last generation, it may not have been the game for us. I've certainly played a fair amount of it. But in terms of its impact on gaming, Minecraft cannot be underestimated.
And it's, granted, it's on every single console. It's on every single platform ever imaginable, but it's also the best-selling game of all time, I think, at this point.
It's absolutely.
Yeah. But it's a cultural phenomenon. Yeah, I mean, like, and it was, speaking of what, it was a one-man dev team, right, originally?
Yeah, Mojang did it mostly by himself to start, although he did bring in some people along in the end, and then he sold it to Microsoft, and now it's a Microsoft thing.
Yeah, so, and now you got kids wearing Minecraft shirts and everything, like, how many years later? I think it's 10 anniversary, isn't it 10 years now?
Longer, because it came out in, like, 2008. Minecraft is about as old as my kids, and so, yeah.
So, you mentioned Spore being so incredibly disappointing. Are we talking with the 2008 version by Will Wright, was the designer, by Maxis Games?
Yep, that's so, the one.
Yeah.
Oh, well, just confirming, because it seems like the critics largely disagree. If you look at they had a 9.2 out of 10 for IGN, a 91% for PC Gamer, a 84% for Metacritic. Seems like the response is generally pretty positive, although I will note that there is a large section about the DRM controversy and about how I think on Amazon, like, thousands of reviews were given, one-star reviews were left.
It was probably the very first review bomb scenario because of the DRM that was so intrusive that EA was putting into it. That being said, it's not just the DRM that's a problem with the game. The game itself is chock full of problems, and maybe they patched a lot of that stuff out over time. But at launch, it was a buggy mess that wasn't fun to play.
Yeah, there is also note of some bugs that had to be patched. But maybe something for you to go back to. To your point about the Kinect Disneyland Adventures, I feel like there's a big opportunity for an Oculus version of that, right? Like having a virtual...
Or any VR version.
Because, I mean...
The coding is practically all done, right?
When we were preparing for our trip to Disney World, was it last year or 2 years ago? I don't even remember anymore. It must have been 2 years ago.
Would have been two years ago
at this point. Yes. time has been crawling. But Yeah, we watched a bunch of YouTube videos to see some of the rides and to see if the kids would be interested in it and be like, should we use some of our fast passes on these rides, or is this roller coaster look too scary? Does this look too boring? It seems like they've already, whether it's an official Disney thing or not, they've already got a lot of work done in terms of trying to replicate the experience. So there's an idea, Disney. I just want 1% of the proceeds. All right.
Just buy more stuff. They just buy more stuff. Yeah, we've cut. So I already did a Metroidvanias in the platform. So I just have three more real quick hit ones. Dead Rising is memorable, partially because it was a launch title, I believe, for the 360, but also just the fact that Capcom denies it, but they made a video game version of Dawn of the Dead. Like, that's really what they did.
It's all about that consumerism, baby.
But just the insane stuff you could do, like put a Mega Man head on your face and crowd surfer for zombies and stuff like that. And there's a Super Nintendo game called SOS where you were on the Titanic and you were trying to escape with a group. You're trying to get people and escape with them. The fact that you were trying to do something similar in Dead Rising, trying to get people and help them escape from the zombies, which I never even beat this game. I played the first area over and over and over again. But so I don't think it's a great game, but it's stuck out as me as like an early highlight of this generation. And also early highlight, Kirby Canvas Curse, because we're counting DS games, Andrew. That was I don't know if it was a launch title, but it was the game that made me buy a DS, because it was astounding to me that you could use the stylus to draw a platform and Kirby would roll across the platform on that. And it was mind-blowing to me at that time that was something you could actually do and have them do loop-de-loops and all this other stuff. And I had never played a Kirby game before. That was the first Kirby game.
You didn't even play Kirby's Dream Land? Wow. Is that before or after Drawn to Life? Do you remember or do you know?
Before Drawn to Life?
I thought there was a game called Drawn to Life where you would draw things on the DS, and like if you drew a car, then a car would appear and you could like ride it or something like that.
I'm going to assume that was after, because like I said, I'm pretty sure Canvas Curse was pretty close to a launch title, I believe. You could look it up. Scribblenauts was another, but I don't think you drew in Scribblenauts. I think you just typed stuff out.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Scribblenauts. I'm getting confused now. Drawn to Life was 2007.
I think Drawn to Life was a subtitle of a Scribblenauts game, maybe. Anyway, will you look that up? And then the last one I just had in here was, because to me it kind of brought indie games to the forefront. It was Braid. Say what you will about Jonathan Blow. I don't know if, because isn't there some controversy maybe around him? There's controversy.
He's been canceled.
He has made himself a controversial figure for a variety of reasons.
But Braid was a kind of a breakthrough in the level of, at least for me, and I think for mass audiences. Again, Andrew, you were much more tuned into indie games probably, but it was kind of the breakthrough to me in paying attention to indie games because of the level of quality and just the innovation that was in that game.
Yeah, there have been a lot of games that have followed, and his ability to make a puzzle game that used relatively new mechanics in a way that was very polished, while also telling a compelling and interesting story, was not something you saw as common. It was a fully fleshed and polished game that was shorter than your AAA-type game experiences, but still really, really good all around. He made it more of a thing because people were like, well, this game is interesting and I want to see more about it, but I'm stuck at this one point. Can I go get a solution or something? So he promises to have all the solutions to the game on his website. You go to his website and the solution is play the game, don't look at things, it's going to ruin your experience, which is fair. That's a fair point for him to make, because part of solving a puzzle is getting to solve the puzzle. But if someone is stuck and they won't be able to move forward and experience the rest of your, then telling them not to use solutions is actually harming yourself as well. And he's definitely got a reputation, as he's made many other games and been embroiled in many other controversies throughout his life in gaming. It's not the easiest person to get along with.
Right. But if you take Braid as the artifact it is,
it's a good game. It's a very, very good game. Probably not as good as it is hyped up to be, but well worth playing at least.
Yeah, I mean, I hate a lot of aspects about it, and I feel like it's trying to be way, way, way too artsy. But I can't deny that the gameplay is pretty novel and fun and enjoyable, even though that's kind of a synonym. And I did kind of enjoy the whole, turning convention on its head or whatever of the ending scene, right?
The postmodernist.
Is it?
Yeah, I was about to say it's kind of postmodern. Ball.
Postmodern or not, it's still kind of interesting, the whole change of perspective, right? Of seeing of the ending because that doesn't need to be spoiled.
Which absolutely plays into all the themes he was building up to that right. point. So even though it comes as a surprise in many ways, once you look back, you can see the groundwork has been built since the very beginning of it.
Yep. Yeah. There's some emotional heft there at the end. So yeah. So I felt like yeah, those are the only three that I needed to bring up. But well, I guess the two others that were actually in the running for my personal best, I don't have to dive into them, but were Crackdown and Saints Row 2. Just because I had so much fun playing both of those games. But in the end, they're iterations on the sandbox genre. As insane as Saints Row 2 is, and as innovative, I think, as Crackdown was.
Too bad they couldn't keep that innovation up for any of the sequels.
Correct, yeah. Like, I did not bother with Crackdown 2. And Saints Row 2 is still the only Saints Row game I've played. But I remember making
probably made the best choices.
I remember making my character look like the Joker, and the most memorable moment was grabbing some poor random passerby and tossing them around the corner at the exact moment a truck or a car came racing down the street and blew them away, and I was like, I didn't mean to do that.
Oh, you didn't know the car was coming. Okay.
Oh, well. No, because it was a blind corner, and I threw this poor person in the street.
Well, what were you hoping would happen when you threw them in the street?
Blew them away. I don't even know, but I remember that sequence is burned in my memory of that happening. It was one moment. There are other moments. I mean, you drive a truck full of fecal matter and spray it across the town, too. So.
As one does.
When I talked about San Andreas and I said, oh, there's some crazier sandbox games the next generation, I was meaning Saints Row 2. So, yeah, I should bring it up as worthy for discourse.
All right.
All right, Andrew just let out a yawn.
That's what you're worthy of discourse games.
we're getting late, and I'm still on my vaccine come down, too, even though it's not as
yeah.
All right, well.
Yes, but we are all vaccinated at this point, so the rampant discourse is immune from COVID.
For now.
For now, yeah. Yes. Indestructible.
Who knows, the next meeting we might be in person. You never know. The audio quality might be worse.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me tonight. If you have any thoughts on how wrong Andrew is about all of his picks, or how right I am, and how cheated I was by them picking the wrong games, let us know at rampantdiscourse.com. or facebook.com/rampantdiscourse. You can join the discourse on our Discord channel at discord.io/rampantdiscourse. You can follow us on Twitter @rampantdisc. Did I miss any? I think I'm good.
I think you're good.
All right.